Thank you, Tim. That is a good introduction, and thank you, Becca. A good introduction to our Advent time.
I want you to, without falling asleep, close your eyes for a moment and just take some deep breaths. And I want you to use your inner ear and listen. There is a song in the universe. Some might call it a force or gravity, dark matter, energy, whatever it is, weaving together creation with color and majesty, light and dark, hidden and explosively dynamic. It's a constantly moving, gusting and still, cacophony and whispering, pulsing heartbeat of a song. If you want, you can open your eyes now. We sometimes catch snippets of the song when, at the birth of a child, we suddenly know that all people have been born, and every time it is a profound miracle, and everyone is a profound miracle. We hear that song in a child's first cry. We catch sight of a song, of this song, when in the dead of a cold and blowy winter, we look closely at the seemingly dead-looking tree and witness large leaf buds that weren't there the day before. A lover's caress as they squeeze by you in a crowded, noisy kitchen. You are loved, it whispers in your being. We catch a sense of the song. We feel the rhythm, the pulse, when picking up a fallen chick to place her back in the nest. The flutter of wing, the quickening pulse, the furtive hop out of your hand. The smell of a long-departed loved one that lingers in a closed canister filled with her hairbrushes and bobby pins. The shriek of wild abandon that only children can make at the end of a long and hard school year. The feeling of the sun shining through the windows and warming you up after a month of dreary, dark days. A sense that there are more galaxies than hairs on an Afghan hound's head, and knowing that, or body, and knowing that each last one of them is filled with more stars than there are tumbleweed seeds in eastern Washington. There is a song in the universe that is bigger and greater and still more awe-inspiring and magnificently exquisite than these that I've just mentioned. And yet we can only describe it by what we know or what we suspect that we don't quite know. It lies beneath all things. It lies within all things. Some might call it a force, gravity, dark matter, energy, weaving together through creation with color and majesty, light and dark, hidden and explosively dynamic. It is trust. It is hope. It is life. It is faith, it is love, it is, it was, and it will be. When I was in college at CNBC, which is now Canadian Mennonite University, we often would be called to sing with the Winnipeg Symphony, usually around Christmas, usually a classical Christmas oratorio. And one year, we sang a new piece commissioned by a wealthy family, simply called Revelation. This oratorio followed the order of the book of Revelation, the stranding of John on Patmos, the letters to the churches, the breaking of the seals, the times of time of great tribulation. And the more we sang, the more dissonant the music became, until at one point we came to a part where we were all asked to sing a different note than the neighbor beside us. A tone or a half tone above or below, and then to sing that note loudly. Now, for all of you music folks, this was likely the hardest thing that we had to do in the whole oratorio. We had to deliberately clash our voices. It doesn't sound good. It took so much practice to work on that dissonance, but the end result was painful to hear. All the while, the strings played a frantic staccato. And then it started with the mezzo-soprano soloist, and then the tenor, a clear, pure, warm, and rich note. The second altos and first tenors in the choir joined, then the rest of the altos and the tenors, then the sopranos an octave higher. The note rang out pure and sharp and rich, with only the bass still with dissonance, until slowly the baritone, the bass, and last the basso profundo at the bottom rounded to that note. The sound drowning out the quieting of strings. The whole concert hall rang with the sound of God's light bursting through the darkness as we sang, "I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first, the last, who was and is, and who is to come." Now, carry that with us. Advent is a time of expectation, of anticipation. But for us here in the Northern Hemisphere, it is also a time of gathering darkness. I have shared it before, how the darkness during Advent is a necessary darkness. Darkness is the harsh noise, the image of the chaotic cosmic forces advancing on the serene, pure innocence. It's the buzzing of that dissonant sound. Advent is not a fuzzy preparation for Christmas, but a time of questions yelled out into the darkness. It is a bracing of the body and a straightening of the spine against this darkness, all the while listening for that clear pitch. These are the tones of the Advent season. They are hard to hear. But today, this season, I invite you into the walk through the chaos toward that light of hope. Now, you will notice that we are using strikingly different texts this year than we would normally be using during Advent. And that's because this year we are using Year 3 of the Narrative Lectionary. And this lectionary does not mention the more familiar Advent stories until the Sunday right before Christmas. So over a 9-month period then, the Narrative Lectionary moves through this overarching biblical story. This lectionary is not simply a series of stories though, but rather it is a series of stories that enable us to better understand and appreciate what is going on in the broader Bible. So today is the first Sunday of Advent, the first Sunday of this church year. And we'll touch on two of the stories that we don't normally preach about, but carry with us on our journey toward the light. First, the story of Daniel. The most popular account, the one we learn in Sunday school. There's adventure. There's intrigue. There's politics. There's desperation, accusation, hope, faith. soul searching and awe and lions. Let's hear the tale. It began with jealousy. It began with Daniel, the child of Israel, in exile in present-day Iraq. Daniel and his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were favored over all the exiles because they were wise and smart and healthy. Plus, they were experts at interpreting visions and dreams sent by God. We know the story of the fiery furnace, where Daniel's friends were thrust into the furnace and protected by God's hands. Later, Daniel interpreted the writing on the wall that signaled the imminent end of Nebuchadnezzar's son Belshazzar's rule over the Chaldeans. Daniel proved himself worthy of note by the incoming rulers, the Medes, and soon found himself one of three presidents who were to rule over about 40 satraps each and then report to the king. Now, the satraps and the other presidents were really jealous of Daniel because he and King Darius were tight. And they decided that they wanted to get Daniel out of there. But because Daniel was near perfect, they figured the only way they could really get him was through his faith in God. So they conspired against Daniel and tricked the king into making a decree and a document that couldn't be changed, that anyone who prays to anyone for 30 days except to King Darius would be thrown into a den of lions. Well, King Darius thought that sounded really nice, and he signed the document and made the law, and it was enforced. Now, Daniel, being one of the presidents, knew about this law and the consequences of praying to God and being found doing so. Yet still, every day, he went to his home and prayed three times a day. The conspirators came and found Daniel praying. And after reminding the king of his law that couldn't be revoked, they brought forward Daniel and said, "See, you've got to throw Daniel into the lion's den because he prayed to his God and not to you." King Darius was very upset, and he tried until evening to save Daniel. But the law proved to be foolproof, and Daniel was thrown into a den of lions. "May your God, whom you faithfully serve, deliver you," said Darius. And a stone was laid before the mouth of the den and sealed with the king's ring so that Daniel would not escape. The king fasted all night and couldn't sleep, and in the morning he went down to see what became of Daniel. "Oh, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you faithfully serve, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Daniel then said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they would not hurt me, because I was found blameless before him and also before you, O king. I have done no wrong." Daniel was removed from the den and was perfectly fine. The king then threw the satraps who had accused Daniel and all their families into the den of lions, and before they reached the bottom of the den, they were overpowered and devoured. This both shocked and delighted the king, and he wrote to everyone throughout the world and sent out a decree that everyone should tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. "For he is the living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed, and his dominion has no end. He delivers and he rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, for he has saved Daniel from the power of the lions." So there are several things that were not in Daniel's favor. First, he was in exile. He was captured from his family home in the land which God had given God's people, the Hebrews. He and his friends were captured and taken away and plunked down into a city and a country with politics and a religion that was completely unfamiliar to him. Yet Daniel and his friends managed to figure out a way that they could live out their faith and hope and trust in Yahweh and keep their culture and traditions. At the same time, they could keep participating in the politics and the government of two enemy nations. Daniel survived the overtaking of the Chaldeans by the Medes and remained powerful within their government as well. I cannot imagine what kind of man Daniel was, although I likely would have been intimidated by his character whilst secretly admiring his fortitude and faith. The second story that we have during Advent is the one that Bryce read from Luke 23, 1-5, where Jesus was before Pilate, and Pilate asked, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus answered, "You say so." After Pilate found no reason to accuse Jesus, the crowds and the chief priests insisted on his persecution, stating he stirred up the people by teaching all over. You may wonder what Daniel and Jesus have in common that the narrative lectionary would put them together for the first of Advent. Well, if you do not wonder, know at least that I did wonder. I have a few thoughts. One, both Daniel and Jesus were faithful to God. They actively lived out their faith and they didn't hide from the world and those in power at the time. Both Jesus and Daniel did not stop their actions of faith, even when threatened with persecution and death. They did not deny their actions and they remained firm, rather dying than giving up what they believed to be the right thing to do. Would this have been a conscious decision, a conscious choice to purposefully break the law, to follow their conscience? Yes. In both cases, their actions were deliberate, and they defied the social ethics of the day. In short, Daniel and Jesus defying the authority of the day was a teleological suspension of the ethical. That's a good thing, you know? I never thought I would say that. It was a teleological suspension of the ethical, where the usual ethical rules are temporarily overridden by a higher, divinely ordained purpose. In other words, it means that they were temporarily setting aside ethical norms, like following the laws of the government, in the case of Daniel, in order to pursue a higher divine command or personal faith. In even more other words, if a specific law causes you to sin, don't follow that law because your allegiance lies with God. And God's law is greater than the laws of the world. Confusing? It's taken me almost 30 years to figure out what it meant. And here I thought I would never ever use that phrase that I learned in my religion and modern thought class with Harry Huebner. But teleological suspension of the ethical, I will give you a sticker if you can say that next week. What was it that motivated both Daniel and Jesus? What held their purpose? What kept them going when they knew the consequences of their behavior? It's quite simply love. But seriously, not the kind of love that one would have for a crush in the eighth grade, but a ferocious love. The kind of love that's described in the Song of Solomon 8, 6, and 7, which goes, come on, read. There we go. "Set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm. For love is as strong as death, passion fierce as the grave. It flashes and its flashes of fire, a raging flame. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can the floods drown it. If one offered for love all the wealth of one's house, it would be utterly scorned." That's the kind of love I'm talking about. The kind of love that we sing of when we sing the song, "My Life Flows On in Endless Song." Above the tumult and the strife, I hear its music ringing, It sounds an echo in my soul. How can I keep from singing? And that is it. This first Sunday of Advent, we're invited to stop and listen for that sound, that clear voice amid the chaos of this world, and follow where it leads us. Hopefully not literally into the den of lions, but maybe metaphorically it will. Where will you go? Where will the journey take us this Advent season? Where will you be invited to lean into the chaos to catch a whiff of the Spirit? What will God call out of us? In the season of Lent, we're invited to give up practices that have been hurting our relationship with God or with ourselves or with others. The focus is on letting go. But in Advent, however, we're invited to take up a new practice or to grow a spiritual discipline that we've already practicing. What practice is God calling you to pick up so that to foster and nurture and strengthen your faith? Spiritual disciplines like practicing prayer, journaling, art, works of compassion, practicing deliberate kindness, walking, meditating, all these direct our attention to help us listen and comprehend. They focus our attention to see and hear and smell and taste and touch and know and anticipate God's love song in the world. When we hear the sound of God's love song, will we follow? Will you sing along? I invite you to travel with us this season as we walk through that darkness toward the unseen dawn of God's hand. Let's pray. God, our life flows on in endless song, above all of the earth's lamentation. And yet we still always struggle to hear that sound of your voice. But this season, as we enter it and the darkness looms, may we catch glimpses or anticipate or know that we are not alone in this time and that there are many that are seeking you, that your sound echoes throughout the world if we would just find the frequency and listen. Be with us today and always, and invite us to see what we see on the journey with you.